guys. Hi. It's nice to be with you. I've got to like juggle. I've never had a doodly boppy clicky thing before, so I'm going to do my best with this. But it's so nice to be here with you guys. I feel like everybody always says that when they speak somewhere new. Let's be honest, it's so nice to be here with you guys. But it really is. I'm really excited. I was saying to Nathan, it kind of feels like just like home. We are trying to move to Basingstoke. So, yeah, we're trying. We're on our way. We have whispers of a completion date, so we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, it's really nice to kind of feel like we're amongst family, in-laws and friends. We've met a few of you, so it does feel really comfortable and nice to chat. And also, I feel really excited and really comfortable because God is already speaking, and he's so kind and so gracious. Like, every single time I've come to speak somewhere, God will speak through the prophetic, kind of teeing up what I'm going to say. And I promise I did not speak to my mother-in-law at all about what I was going to say, which in hindsight seems reckless. I feel like that would have been a really good kind of cheat sheet to get a feel for what goes on here and kind of speak. I didn't tell her anything, but loving the merry-go-round, the rocking chair, the kind of courage to step out and get out of the status quo, because as you can see, the message today is faith in the so far, so good. So that really is what God has been speaking to me about, and I just kind of thought, Dan mentioned it was a celebration Sunday, and I thought, oh gosh, my message is a little bit more of a commission to kind of maybe step away from some things and do something new. It might be a bit challenging, maybe it'll be a bit uncomfortable, but to hear God already saying the stuff means that we're kind of just working together to communicate what his spirit is saying. So great, the pressure's off me, so we'll see how it goes. But yes, ooh, there's the clicker. Like the world's biggest iPad, so it takes a while to get into it. So yes, faith in the so far, so good. I want to first actually talk a little bit about faith, because I think it's just good to have a little kind of definition before we start talking about such a big concept. And I know many of you will know this, but I think sometimes when people look in on the Christian faith, or even the faith of the Israelites, which we're going to look at as well, it can feel a little bit like a kind of blind faith, just faith in a God because they've decided and that's that, and there's nothing that's going to sway them and there's no reason for it. But actually, when we see faith in the Bible, and actually the root words, it's much more than that. We're talking about a faith that's a faith and a trust in something reliable. In fact, a faith in something that is faithful. I'm going to press this button and see if it works. Woohoo! Okay, good. We're working. We have faith in something or someone that has proven itself faithful, and that then causes us to act faithfully towards it. I'm sure you've all seen or heard the chair analogy. All of you have done it today. When you see a chair, we have faith to sit in a chair. Why? Because usually 99% of the time a chair has proven itself as faithful throughout our life. It's a reliable object. So we act faithfully towards it and we sit down. And this is the faith that we're talking about as we look at the passages today and we think about faith in the so far, so good. So let's bear that in mind. We're going to be looking at two readings. We're going to be looking at two moments in the life of Moses. And what I just want to do is get you guys prepared. We're going to look at, should be up here, Exodus. I have the thing. I'm not used to that. Exodus 17 and Numbers 20, if you have a Bible or a phone that you like to bookmark and kind of get yourselves ready. They're the two passages we're going to be looking at. The readings are from verse 1, so it should jump up straight away. Now, for me, when we talk about someone like Moses, or if a speaker says we're going to be looking at Moses or David, Daniel, any of these kind of key players, these big kind of characters of faith, maybe it's a bit prideful, but I tend to feel at a bit of a disadvantage from the get-go. Because these guys, I mean, Moses' life is pretty much marked by faith. I mean, even as a baby, the faith of a mother to place him in a basket, sail him down a river and hope that he, pray that he does okay, have faith in the God who has been faithful. And then obviously as Moses' life plays out, we just see massive moments of faith and things that, I'll be honest, I haven't necessarily experienced. But the good news is today in these moments, we're actually going to look at a moment where Moses kind of gets things a little bit wrong. Maybe this isn't good, but I get quite a lot of comfort when I look at passages where these big, great leaders kind of get things a little bit skew-iff, because I know I do all the time. And Moses actually monumentally kind of messes up, but in the most simple of ways. And again, I empathize with that on my walk with God and towards him. And so we're going to look at these passages. Now, they're seemingly identical. It might be in your passage or phone, your Bible, that they're both called the water from the rock moments. You might know them. So if you've got Exodus 17 ready, I keep looking like it's not going to be me that does it. There we go. Let's read together. Okay, so the whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." Moses replied, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test?" But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, "Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and our livestock die of thirst?" Then Moses cried out to the Lord, "What am I to do with these people? They're almost ready to stone me." The Lord answered Moses, "Go out in front of the people. Take with you some of the elders of Israel and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile and go. I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock and water will come out of it for the people to drink." So Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel. And he called the place Massah and Meribah because the Israelites quarreled and because they tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" So it's a pretty intense situation. Moses is leading the Israelites out of their oppression in Egypt. And it's funny, I can't remember when you brought the word about the sunshine and the kind of it lasts for about 5 minutes and we're like, this is great. And then it's, oh, the hay fever. This is basically where the Israelites are at in a big way. They've seen the faithfulness, as we've mentioned, the reliability, the faithfulness of God. They've acted faithfully in going out following Moses. They've seen incredible things. And yet here we are, and we see it time and time again in the story of Exodus, where their faith is now dwindling. They don't have a faith in this reliable, faithful God who's proven himself as faithful. They want to know where their water is. They feel like they're going to perish. And really, they're kind of threatening Moses' life. It's a pretty intense situation. And I think what's really important here, something I just want to focus on, is the importance of God's instruction, which should come up. Here we go. So what does God tell Moses to do? He says, "Go out in front of the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile and go." Now, this staff, this kind of wooden rod, this walking stick is so important in this story, and it's so important for Moses. So this instrument, this wooden rod, has been with Moses since he was called by God. It's been an instrument in his ministry, kind of like a trusty kind of instrument that sees God's power move. God uses it as an instrument for his miracles and the miraculous. So for Moses, I think he would have felt, as any of us would, when God said, "Okay, Moses, take the staff," he would have felt brilliant. I know what happens when I take the staff. I've seen it turn water to blood. I've seen it bring plagues upon our enemies. I've seen this staff touch water and it part and us be able to walk through it and then the water drown our enemies behind me. When God says, "Take the staff before the people and go," my faith is high, right? We've got a faithful God who's proved himself as a faithful and I can have high faith in him. But also we have an instrument which has proved itself as faithful, therefore I'm going to have faith in it and act faithfully. And that's what Moses does. He takes the staff before the people, he hits the rock, the water comes out, and the people are hydrated, the livestock can drink, back to sunshine, everybody's feeling good, and I imagine praising God. So that's our first passage. Now what I want to do is look at the mirror image passage in Numbers. So we're going to click to that and we're going to read together. So it's going to seem very, very similar. If you don't know the passage as well, we're going to have, again, as I said, a mirror image. So what I'd love to do is play a bit of a spot the difference, okay? Some audience participation. And you can't leave me hanging because I'm a guest and that'd be really awkward and really embarrassing for me. So if not, I've got my in-laws. You'll hear from me. It's okay. So we're going to read through it, and I just want you guys, you know, if you know the passage really well, I mean, that's a bit of a cheat sheet, but if you don't, it'd be great to hear from you if you can spot any difference, big difference, in the two passages. So let's go from the top. I'll read from here. In the first month, the whole Israelite community arrived at the desert of Zin, and they stayed at Kadesh. There, Miriam died and was buried. Now there was no water for the community, and the people gathered in opposition to Moses and Aaron. They quarreled with Moses and said, "If only we had died when our brothers fell dead before the Lord. Why did you bring the Lord's community into this wilderness that we and our livestock should die here? Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to this terrible place? It has no grain or figs, grapevines or pomegranates, and there is no water to drink. Moses and Aaron went from the assembly to the entrance to the tent of meeting and fell face down, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. The Lord said to Moses, "Take the staff, and you and your brother Aaron gather the assembly together. Speak to that rock before their eyes, and it will pour out its water. You will bring water out of the rock for the community, so they and their livestock can drink." So Moses took the staff from the Lord's presence, just as he commanded him. He and Aaron gathered the assembly together in front of the rock, and Moses said to them, "Listen, you rebels, must we bring you water out of this rock?" Then Moses raised his arm and struck the rock twice with his staff. Water gushed out, and the community and their livestock drank. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not trust in me enough to honor me as holy in the sight of the Israelites, you will not bring this community into the land I will give to them." These were the waters of Meribah, where the Israelites quarreled with the Lord and where he was proved holy among them. Any spot the difference guesses for me? Oh, good. Yes, give me one. Yes. Yes, that's what I'm looking for. There were a few other things, but that we can stop right there. Let's have a look. This is my first kind of spot the difference. Here we go. This is the key thing I want to touch on here. Moses' instructions were clear, although you could argue that they weren't. We'll get into it. God's instructions were clear, to Moses. The first instance, strike the rock and water will come out of it for the Israelites. The second instance, speak to that rock before their eyes and it will pour out its water. So this is where it all goes a little bit wrong. And I think what's interesting, I find this so interesting, and when I was kind of looking at this passage and going over and over it, even over the past year, I've just been so into this kind of passage. Notice that in that first kind of sentence in Numbers 20 verse 8, God still says, "Take the staff." And I'm like, oh God, like that feels unfair. Like it feels like a kind of test. It feels like a trap. And I'm like, oh gosh, but I do regard you as holy. Moses didn't. I'm sorry for arguing. You know, that sort of thing. But it's so interesting that God tells Moses to take the staff, this thing that he knows Moses has a real trust in and has seen him through all of these incredible moments. So why did Moses not listen? As you said, he's angry with the Israelites. He does have a lot of emotion. Part of me wonders if, as we discussed before about having faith in something faithful, I feel like when Moses heard, "Take the staff, and you and your brother," at that point, almost like a child, I think he just stops listening. He's like, "Don't worry, I know what happens next. I've got this. I'm taking the staff, we're going, we're getting the water, it's fine." God promises the water will come. Moses strikes the rock twice. It's like he's pretty hyped at this point, and water comes out for the Israelites. Realistically, at this point, thinking about the faith and the description we've been talking about, Moses has more faith in the instrument than the God that provided it. And this is where the problem lies. This is how he did not regard God as holy, which is a pretty big deal. He had more faith in the instrument than the God that gave it. It's the chair thing all over again. I think sometimes we have more faith in the instruments or the things that God has given us than the God that provides it for us. This merry-go-round, this rocking chair that you guys were saying, it's such an easy trap to fall into. And I think one of the reasons for that is because the staff isn't bad. So often when we think about obedience and cutting things off and we're taught to kind of step away from things, it's things that are kind of inherently sinful or bad or harmful for us. I think we have some of the youth in here and young people. I think when we're told to, as if I'm in that group, we teenagers, we're told to cut things off that are harmful and sinful. It's very sometimes black and white, and this is good and this is bad, and so get rid of it because God says. But I think this is an area of maturity as we realize that actually sometimes there's a little bit of idolatry that goes on with some of the good, great blessings and tools and instruments that God gives us in our lives. I've been spending a lot of time looking at Peter's relationship with Jesus, and it struck me recently, like in the past year, that when obviously Jesus meets Peter, and one of the first miracles is in a boat, which is Peter's like just home turf. He's a fisherman, like a boat. It's good by Peter. Like, let's do a miracle in a boat. Fish. Wow. Lots of fish if you don't know the miracle. Got to skip through it. But it's in a boat. And later on, we see their relationship developing and they're out on the water. And next thing, Jesus is saying to Peter, hey, Peter, get out of the boat. Walk on water. Boats are common sense, okay? Boats are good things. It's been a resource for Peter. It's his home turf. We see even miracles happen in the boat. And then Jesus is saying, why don't you get out of the boat? I think Jesus is excellent at showing us in our heart where things are above him and things are more of a trusted, faithful instrument in our lives than the God that provides them. I'm kind of just sidetracking here, but God is so good at that. And I think there's a maturity that we can learn from this passage. Like, are we willing, if God were to ask us to leave something behind or change the way that we do things or let go of the instrument, maybe, I've got hair in my mouth. Sorry, I'm very honest while I'm speaking. I had a hair in my mouth. Would we be willing to let it go? Would we be willing to change the way we do things? It could be, I don't know, so far so good relationships, friendships, romantic relationships. It could be geographical locations, where we live, where we wouldn't be willing to live, where we want to study, whether it's close or far away. Parenting, that's such a good example. I've not yet gone through parenting, but I've lived with two families of five, so three children in both households, and it is fascinating. If any of you are kind of looking to be a lodger, live with a family. It's great. All the parents are like, oh gosh, spies. But it is, it's great. Take a notebook, make notes. But watching parents that learn, you know, they're faithfully like trying to serve God, raise children in the right way. They learn the ways that the children need and kind of come up with these techniques and so far so good God-honoring methods. And then child number two pops out and everything is out the window. This is like a new species and they have to figure out a new way and let go of some of those things that they've been holding on to, the so far so good blessings and lessons and instruments that God has given them and tools, all good stuff, and yet here comes this new child that's completely different. Parenting, could be our jobs, it could be our leadership, it could be how we serve in the church. Maybe we've been doing something for so long. It could be the church that we go to, and I hope everyone's not going to break up with everyone, leave the church, stop serving, and never come back because these guys won't be happy with me. That's not what I'm saying, but again, it's about that question. If God were to ask, if God were to give me the new instruction, number one, would I hear it? And number two, would I be willing? Does it make you feel a little bit sick? So for me, I think, I've been looking at this passage, I said, over the past kind of year. And God, as with most messages that he gets me to prepare, he's talking to me about something that I need to work on. And a year ago, Dan mentioned that I started Clarity Magazine for women. I was 18. I'm now 30, so it was a while ago. And a decade of magazines, print runs, Christian magazine. And me and Nath were walking the dog. We kind of do our like praying, big talks, walking the dog. And really felt God like release us and move us on to something new at issue 18. So we'd done 18 print magazines. Good. It was becoming quite rough. Like it was just kind of, it was becoming quite difficult. And God was calling me into kind of speaking and the New Day and things like that. And we felt really good about it. So I was like, yeah, great. And then I made the mistake of mulling it over by myself without God in the conversation. And I thought, you know what sounds so much better than 18? 20. I was like, issue 20. We did 20. When people ask me, I can say, we did 20 magazines. And so that's what I did. Yeah, so I went ahead and we did issue 19 and 20. And I can assure you it was the worst, maybe not the worst, but the most difficult and almost like slow motion year and a half of my entire life. I've been really privileged and blessed by God that throughout my walk with him from a teenager, he's been quite clear with his instructions and I've kind of just done the stuff. And this was the first time I understood what people talk about when they say you're doing things outside of the kind of favor and the will of God. It was like there wasn't a reason why it was taking so long. Everyone was ready, everyone was working, and yet we could not get these magazines over the line. It was just such a slog. And yet I knew that people would be blessed by the magazines. Like I knew they had God's word in, it's not going to go out and come back void. Like this is going to be great. And people were blessed, and people were egging us on, and yet it was my relationship with God that was serving, that was suffering a kind of fracture. And this is what is so scary about this passage, and this is what hit me like a bus when God was revealing this to me, because I was kind of in the midst of it. Something really interesting, a kind of opposite of spot the difference, similarity between the two passages. Do you notice that in both instances, the Israelites get water? That freaks me out. It's scary. Because Moses, to them, is carrying out this incredible act of faith. He's doing the thing. He's striking the rock. The water's coming out, and they're watered. They're hydrated. Praise God. This is incredible. The people that Moses is serving and leading and speaking to are blessed. They're hydrated. They're given life by God. But behind closed doors, it's Moses' and God's relationship that suffers a fracture. God says, you didn't trust me enough to regard me as holy. Like, for Moses, that must be like, you know? And not just that, but you're not going to get to go to the promised land. You've been on this journey. I mean, I can't even imagine the journey. Moses isn't going to get to enter the land that he's promised to the people, because he hit a rock with a stick. And I think when you read it, kind of just as us in our humanness, we're like, really? It just seems so unfair. So I think, yeah, I guess it's a warning, isn't it? People in our leadership, in our friendships, in our relationships, in our serving God, doing the same things, we need to be careful not just to rely on the fact that people seem blessed and they say we're doing a good job, but also be looking at our private intimacy, relationship, prayer life with God. Are we regarding him as holy? And if he were to change the instruction, well, we might not even get any praise, we might not even see the blessing, might not see the fruit yet, would we be willing to listen? We can continue doing things the same way, and yet we haven't regarded God as holy. So it's concerning. And as I'm kind of finishing, what I don't want us to do is leave thinking, well, that felt rubbish. Maybe I should be quitting everything. As I said, leaving the church, just finding something new. And also thinking about Moses not entering the promised land, we can get into a bit of a funk where we're like, well, then what's my... The word punishment, it's probably not the right word, but the word punishment comes to mind. When reading this, I think, punishment. Not to enter the promised land after that whole journey because you didn't regard God as holy in that one instruction. That seems huge to me. What's my punishment for doing these magazines or whatever it is, you know, if it feels like maybe this is something we need to look at. And I think the important thing, and what I really want to end with, because it's just so gorgeous, is that as with most Old Testament stories, accounts, not only are we learning about who God is and who his people are, so here we're talking about the holiness of God, the faithfulness of God, his provision, his grace, and also the importance of regarding him as holy and that trust in him first and foremost, we're also seeing a prophetic picture of what God is offering to us in him, the relationship that we are now able to have with God himself, with Jesus. Why was it so important that Moses had to strike the rock once and then speak to the rock? Well, in this message, in this passage, God is creating, as I said, a prophetic picture, the rock himself, the rock Jesus, the rock our God. What happened to our rock? His body was broken. He was struck once for all, once. His body struck so that his blood could pour out, providing life and opportunity and freedom for his people who are in the midst of death. They're standing, they're saying, we're not going to survive this. How are we going to make it through? Well, the body is struck once, his blood flows, and we are offered freedom. But you don't need to kill Jesus twice, because he's alive. We don't need to kill Jesus twice. We're not striking any more rocks. God said it is finished. Jesus said it is finished. And that's why it's so important then that Moses was offered this new instruction. Hey, Moses, you can just speak to the rock and water will flow. We are now in a place where we don't need to get too hung up on the punishment. What if I can't enter the promised land? I've not been listening. What am I supposed to do? Hey, you can speak to the rock and his living water flows through and into the church. Again, when we're in a place of thirst and desperation, facing life and death, now that his body has been broken and he's resurrected and he's living with God at the right hand on high, we get to speak to the rock and say, Jesus, I need your living water. And his water flows and the people drink. We are hydrated. We are given life. The rock only needed to be struck once, and that is why it was so important that Moses followed this instruction, to understand that God is holy. He doesn't make mistakes. He's telling a story, and now we're part of that story. And so I thought it would be good for, probably not me actually, maybe someone leading here to pray for us, to pray for this church. As we close, I don't know if you call the band back up. Don't know how things happen here. But I think it would be good, yeah, to have us pray that we would firstly be, or we, Big C, be a church that are listening to God, willing to get off the merry-go-round, willing to get out of the rocking chair and listen to his new instructions without fear of punishment, but with expectation of opportunity. And also that we would be a church that stand in his freedom, that we understand that we have access to his living water because he said it is finished, that we don't need to keep striking the rock, looking for punishment in a place of anger or fear, but that we can speak to him and say, Jesus, I need you. And his living water will flow and nourish and hydrate the church.
Can we just give Taylor a round of applause just to show our appreciation?